CliffCentral.com.
This show contains adult content. If you find it offensive, please go to the CliffCentral.com website where there's a show for you.
CliffCentral.com. It is Friday morning sex talk with Jonty Searle and some really important and really special guests in the studio with us. Good morning, Tamar.
I'm not the important person, but good morning, Jonty. Thank you.
You are important to me.
That is wonderful. Thank you. You are important to me, too.
Thank you. So now we finished our mutual admiration club for...
No, first I need to tell you how beautiful you are and how gorgeous you look. But yeah, basically, yeah.
Thank you. It's love.
It's love.
It's love. What can I say?
Love is real.
It's love. It is indeed.
Love is real.
So two very special guests that I've actually known for a while to say hello to. And a couple of weeks ago at Sexpo, we actually sat down and had a really interesting chat. Major Karen Holmes, good morning.
Good morning, Jonty.
You have
Tamar.
To talk really close to the mic.
Good morning to you, Tamar and Jonty, and all the listeners.
And Major Margie Stafford.
Good morning, everybody. It's good to be here.
Thank you. And I really appreciate you guys coming to talk about this.
Pleasure.
So this show came about because... At Sexpo, for the past couple of years, the Salvation Army has had a stand there.
Sorry.
And you have this amazing font of people. And my connection with that is interesting because my daughter was involved in designing that.
Wow.
So I knew about it before Sexpo. She told me that she was involved in it. And I saw you guys and I'd walk past your stand and I'd say hello and that was kind of it. And I never really knew the extent of this issue in South Africa. And we did an interview for a few minutes at Sexpo. And the extent of human trafficking and slavery in South Africa, it staggered me, and I was absolutely speechless with this. The idea of people as commodity is, I can't get my head around that. It just, it's this totally foreign idea. I know it's been part of our world for so long.
Yeah.
But the fact that it exists, and probably more than ever, in a greater quantity due to organization and technology and so many things. And that's what we are talking about this morning. And it's horrific. There's no, you run out of words, adjectives, superlatives to describe this. How did the Salvation Army get involved in this?
Can I take you back to like the 1800s?
Yes, please.
In Victorian England.
Yes.
The age of consent was, I think, 12 at that time. And the Salvation Army started to talk about we need to lift this age of consent up. We wanted it to be lifted up to 18. So what happened...
The age of sexual consent.
Yes.
Okay.
So what actually happened was a lady from a brothel got tremendously saved. And she said to William Booth, I want to tell you that there are children being sold on the streets of England. And nobody believed her. But it was all set up with a reporter from the Pall Mall Gazette, and they went along and they bought a young lady for the princely sum of like £5.
And in those days, that was a lot of money.
Of course. And her name was Eliza Armstrong. And they took Eliza Armstrong and they sent her across to France. And then they went to Parliament and they showed the receipt of payment for this little girl. Plus, they'd had this huge, big petition drawn up. It took the whole row of Parliament, and then eventually they decided, no, we'll definitely act, and they had introduced an act immediately and arrested the Pall Mall Gazette guy and Bramwell Booth from the Salvation Army as the two people that were the first arrested on this act, because they made it illegal for you to buy and sell children. And the only reason why it was illegal was because they had not obtained the permission of the child's father. So we were able to change a few rules and laws. The age of consent went up to 16. And from there on, we've just rolled along with this thing. We have never stopped talking about human trafficking. But just before the 2010 soccer thing, we had a huge, big national look at what's happening with human trafficking around huge sporting events. And so we had a lot of things happening around that time. And that's when the Salvation Army really started to do a lot of concerted effort against the trafficking of people.
So please message us with your questions. Our WhatsApp number is 079-748-2090. If you've had any experience with this, and it's an international scourge, you know, since I started talking about it, the stories that I've heard about people, especially going to some of the Middle Eastern countries, to Dubai, you know, passports taken away, where people are going as au pairs.
That's right.
And put into slavery.
Just now, a few weeks ago, there was a story with a man traveling with a young lady that she was trying to send signals in an airplane to the stewardess, and that's how they realized that she's actually being
transferred.
Yeah, they rescued her.
Yeah.
But that's only one story.
Exactly.
Yeah. And that's Mexico.
Tip of the iceberg in terms of what's happening. Around the world, do you have any idea how many people are in slavery?
You know, there's huge numbers being bandied about, and there's always somebody that's going to say, what a lot of rubbish. That's, you know, I just always take people back. Do you remember when we first started talking about HIV and AIDS?
Yes.
We had huge numbers, and everybody was saying, what a lot of rubbish. People are just sucky. You just want funds and all the rest of it. When numbers started coming and we started to collate and we started to get real data, we were nowhere near the extent. We had so underestimated what was going on. And I think it's exactly the same with us. We, at the moment, let's just say somebody gets found now today in our country and they get taken to a police station. There is no code to say this is a trafficked victim. There's a whole process. She's got to go through a whole interview thing, and then we decide, is this a trafficking victim or isn't this a trafficking victim? By that stage, she's gone through secondary victimization and all sorts of things. And sometimes they don't even know they're a victim. So when we talk in numbers, they bandy about stuff like 27 million. I have no idea. And I don't think the world has any idea. But I do know the extent of human nature is that where there's profit to be made is somebody that'll sell.
Yeah. That's the simple truth. You know, there was an interesting thing said once that, and I don't remember who said it, there is no end to human perversity.
That's right.
Simple
just when
truth.
You think you've got you can, human race cannot get any lower.
Yeah.
Oh yes, we do.
We manage.
Absolutely. And we do it fantastically.
With aplomb. Yeah, we do.
We do.
Yeah, we do.
It's a sad thing, but we do. So there's different kind of avenues of this, because there's sex slavery.
Yes.
And then there's kind of labor slavery, for want of a better word. I don't know what else to call it.
And according to the World Slave Index, South Africa has got more people in slavery as on a labor level than they do in the sex level. And the only reason why we can talk on the sex level is because that's the area that we've really been involved in. But we do know that in South Africa, for example, they rescued a whole lot of Bangladeshi men that were enslaved on a farm. Then you hear about some Pakistani people being held. And then the guys in Newcastle, 72, rescued out of a factory. So it is definitely high, and it's not policed very clearly.
Where are these people coming from who are slaves?
South Africa is three things. South Africa is a destination country. So we have slaves coming from all over the world into South Africa.
So people in South Africa are buying people.
100%, right? And then we are a transit country. So slaves are coming in via South Africa to somewhere else.
From around the world?
From around the world, but also mainly from Africa. Yeah. So we're almost like, you know, the distribution center kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And then we have slaves that are actually born and bred in South Africa and sold out.
They're born and bred to be slaves?
Some are. Some are. As horrific as that sounds, some are born from from baby up, they taught how to please a man. They taught how to do whatever they need to do. Just a little while ago, Dr. Phil had somebody on his show that was a young girl that was born into slavery. And she's been at some of the top parties and everything around the world. And she's only just been rescued out of this thing. And the stories she's telling are horrific.
Yeah, I saw it in BBC.
Mm.
Yeah.
So
she was all her life.
Yeah.
All her life.
That's right. Her mother sold her as a baby. Mm. That's right. Mm.
If this is happening in South Africa, what controls are there? What law is there? What are our government and police force doing with this?
We have an act. We have a really good act. It came out in 2013. It was only really ratified in 2015. There's still some policy drafts going around, so not everybody is on board with this thing. But there's definitely a lot more emphasis from government side to try and get this thing going.
Mm.
It's almost like waking up a dinosaur. And, you know, when you start to recognize that there's lots of things you've got to put in place, exit strategies. You've got to have something. If we've got a girl caught in sex trafficking and she's been prostituted since the age of 15, she was abducted at 15, she's been on the street for 4 years, we go out with this amazing white horse kind of idea, we're going to rescue these girls, we're going to take them. What is step two?
Yes.
Where do you put them?
We put them in South Africa, we put them in a shelter for domestic violence. Mm. But what happens after that? That's 90 days. And they're not getting specific treatment they're going to be part of a program, they're going to be...
Do we have that in place, that kind of program?
We do. We have, for domestic violence, we do. We have a number of shelters. And so because it's such an erratic thing that we don't always just go out and find victims of trafficking, we don't have a single center that's just dedicated just to a victim of human trafficking. So, and even a girl, let's just take a prostitute that wasn't trafficked but wants to exit. We've got nothing in place where we can actually help these exit strategies happen. And I often say that the way you get out, you need to find out how did you get in. And then we can talk back and start to build up from that point to where you can actually leave and live a productive life.
Because I would imagine that after somebody has been in that space, as a human, they're pretty destroyed. They're totally dependent on outside factors.
Yeah.
And what they might know of the world, very limited. How do they actually find themselves again and then someplace in society?
Exactly. You know, there was a research done, and this research indicated that a girl that has been trafficked, has been abused on every level that you can imagine, her anxiety levels or her post-traumatic stress disorder level is actually worse than that of somebody that has been in a prisoner of war, in a civil war kind of setup.
Yeah, because maybe they had a meaning, they had values, they had, you know, they fought for something, they can go back to that, but what can she go back to?
Exactly.
Yeah.
There's nothing inside.
You know, that's really fascinating, because Viktor Frankl's whole form of therapy is based on logotherapy, is based on somebody having meaning as being one of the most essential tools of survival.
Exactly. So when you break that and when you destroy that, what do you have? And also, you know, we can take all the prostitutes off the street, but how do I take a prostitute out of your heart, out of your inner person? You know, you've got to do that. And that's hard work.
Mm. You need something to really rehabilitate.
You need a full program from so many different disciplines and aspects of humanity.
That's right.
To do that. There's physical, mental, emotional, spiritual, everything.
Because they've been disconnected from their families, from their culture, from their women.
From themselves.
From themselves, of course. But we are also reflection.
Mm.
So they have nothing to reflect of, reminds them anything of. Something we just spoke briefly about it before the show. Something feminine, something nurturing, something.
And I would imagine violence and fear are an enormous part of this.
Yeah, and also to break down this cultural idea that she's dirty.
Yeah.
She wants to be there. She's making all the money. She's stealing our men. Hello. That is something that is even more soul destroying. Yeah. To try and break down that that stigma that's attached to the girl that stands on the corner.
So this is, it's total control of another person.
100%.
On absolutely every level. So of the money that's charged, do they actually get any of that?
Some of the girls that we rescued and we put into our shelter were telling us that they were getting 35 rand a day, which paid for a meal.
But you've got to think of what kind of meal.
And also the Thai girls that we rescued, they had a little black book. So they thought they were coming out here to do hair and restaurant work and ended up in a brothel in the south of Johannesburg. So they get out, of it. They bring their black book. And in the black book, charged to them is like their airfare, their clothing, rent. So let's just say they have a debt of 84,000 rand. Mm. So every time they service a client, there's a like 5,000 rand credit to them. But every day they're sick. Let's just say they're having their menstrual cycle. So when they're sick, they cannot work.
4 or 5 days.
So then they get fined 5,000 rand a day. So what
happens? You basically balance.
You don't even. You never get out of debt. Mm. Never get out of debt.
And what happens eventually, because at some point I would imagine they're not able to function in the way that they're kind of employed to function.
You know, I when we worked in Pretoria among some of the really – the girls that were on the streets, we went and chatted to them, gave them little gifts, just loved on them. Mm. And the one – some of the pimps used to call me mommy. The one guy phoned me and he said, you must come fetch Tina. She's very, very sick. It's not her real name, but anyway. So I went. She had – sexually transmitted diseases so badly that she couldn't walk. But they would sit her on a chair outside the brothel, and there were still men that wanted to have sex with her because of the screams and because of the way that she behaved when they were penetrating her. So I pick up this girl, and I could pick her up. She weighed about 28 kilograms. She was wasting away. I take her to a hospital. The hospital says, no, there's a clinic for them. I don't want to treat them until I throw all my toys out the cot, then they put her in a ward. And she was really sick. She had TB. She had full-blown AIDS. She was really, really ill. We took her back eventually to our shelter. We looked after her. She went into a hospice. They treated her. They loved her. She came back after a year. And now she spent a year in treatment. After a year, she came back to us. And we looked after her. We actually set her up in a little shop. Until the next door neighbor said to us, listen, there's something going on here. There's men in and out of the shop. She had started her own business there. And the more we're saying, why do you go back to a world that nearly killed you? And she said, it was the one thing that I knew I could do. Hmm. So what do you know, the exit strategies need to be really, really in place. They're going to be expensive. People have got this idea that she wants to be there in the first place. And there's not as much money thrown at getting her out as there was thrown at getting her in.
Yeah. You know what it affirms for me? It is a really sad affirmation of one of the principles of the healing work that I do is the patterns that we work on and how deeply ingrained they become. And for me, in my work, it's such a different level to this. You know, it's about people who are in unhappy and unfulfilled and sometimes abusive relationships. It's people who are not having orgasms. It's people who are not having the pleasure that they could have. But I see the principle is exactly the same of the patterns that we live with and the conditioning. And no matter how little something serves us, we will go where we know.
That's right.
Until we change those patterns. And even on that level, it's such a difficult thing to do. And when you think of somebody who has been absolutely destroyed in that way, how much harder that must be to do that.
Yeah, exactly. So that's what I'm saying. So I can take her off the street and we can really build into her life and we can love in her and we can change even the way she looks at people. But until I can take that core out, until we can change that inner being, and make her understand that she doesn't have to sell herself. I mean, some of the girls tell me stories. I was in Port Elizabeth chatting to one of the prostituted women, and I call them prostituted women. I don't call them prostitutes. I think sometimes the choice is taken away. So this young girl had to go to hospital because her John, for the want of a better word, had put a coke tin up her vagina just to see how high it could go. and it got stuck. So, and she was just saying to me, that's kind of, you don't know. You don't know from one guy to the next. And even that in itself for some of the girls was an adrenaline rush. The fact that you don't know, am I going to make it through tonight or am I not? Mm. One of the young girls was a mother of two. She tries to get home from her night out on the street by about 3 o'clock. So she rents a little room at the back of somebody else's house so that the guy that she rents from doesn't see her coming in, because if he sees her coming in, he wants more money. So what do? You know, you don't want that for your child. And in Port Elizabeth, there are 24-hour creches where these girls can put their children. You know, so society is sort of bending to this. Let's see how we can help them, but of course make a little bit of money on the side.
Hmm. Yeah, the depth of depravity. I don't know what. There's no other. It's beyond words for this. How long has this been in South Africa? How long has it been since this became, or the growth of this industry, for want of a better word?
No, I think it's always been there. I just think we put in a bit of a spotlight on it.
Okay.
So, and I think the spotlight came on just before the 2010. But it's been there the whole time. It's been there. I don't think it's
under our previous government.
Oh, for sure.
So it was never any different.
Oh, for sure. No.
And it was always a blind eye was turned.
Well, you know, it's expensive. If you start to recognize a problem, you've got to put money to it. So let's ignore it. You know, in this country, we have prosecuted a number of prostitutes, but we have never prosecuted a John.
Hmm.
Never once. So something is skew.
And the people who are running these, are they ever caught?
Yeah, they're caught. And lately, we've been seeing prosecutions, which is great, like life sentences, 3-4 life sentences. The pastor... in Port Elizabeth, it was caught just a little while ago.
Yeah.
I mean, there's plenty of girls now coming out and saying what he's been doing. I mean, hello. So we're getting there. We are definitely getting more prosecutions. The United States has a what they call a TIP report, a trafficking in persons report. They issue it every year. And then they judge countries based on three things: protection, prosecution, and prevention. How does the country do on those three levels? South Africa is a tier group two, and we, in other words, we've been watched. We're not great. We're getting there. We're starting to see prosecutions.
Yeah.
But the numbers are ridiculously low compared to what we actually know. Mm-hmm. When we walk out on the streets and we chat and we talk, there's a lady in Hillbrow that works and takes children off the streets. Her stories will break your heart. How prostitutes sometimes leave their kids at Shabin's. That a little child, by the time it's like 7-8 months old, has already been sexually violated.
And so the cycle just continues.
Yeah, that's something we've learned very well here.
Cycles just continue.
That it's recycling itself, and that's something that it's very.
What resources do the police throw at this?
I don't know. Look, I'm not a policeman, but all I can tell you is that I run a helpline.
Yeah.
So I have some of the top guys on board, and I can contact one or two guys from the Hawks.
What is the helpline? Sorry, is that the 422?
No, it's 08000.
08000?
73728. 73728.
We'll put all these contact details up on our social media.
Okay, so that's, I run that line, and I can get a phone call. A guy will say there's a tip-off. There's been some guys smuggled in from another country. I can give it to Hawks, and then I can hold them accountable because I sit on a thing called the Rapid Response Team, and we look at these things that come in from these helplines and these tip-offs, so we can hold each other accountable. So I do know there's some really good guys out there. I do know there's some really ridiculously stupid guys out there that take money and tip offs and everything. So
yeah, and that's become the way of the world, unfortunately. How are these people brought into the country?
There's various ways for them to do this. Plane.
Yeah.
I mean, the guys that traffic will buy the plane ticket and make sure that by boat, South Africa is surrounded by borders.
Yeah.
And so it's easy for these guys. They come in trucks. I mean, just a few months ago, I think, Margie, the children that was found in the truck in Potchefstroom, Klerksdorp.
So border control is very lax.
Absolutely. And
paying a little bit.
How does a truck full of children come through three borders? International borders without anybody seeing anything. So, the sky's the limit as to how they ship. We really make it very easy for any country to have an entrance into our country.
There's a lot of grey borders as well, that are not well policed. Mm. So we get a lot of guys coming across, and it's always the chance of a better life that sort of sparks this thing off,
They sell them an idea. Mm. So you're going somewhere better. There's going to be a job there. It's going to be some infrastructure. You can make money.
You can send money home.
Mm, that's a big thing.
So you've spoken quite a lot about women in the sex trade. Are young boys subjected to something similar?
Very, very much so, and it's getting more and more. We've got a lot of men on our streets, not just young boys. We've got men on our streets hustling, and prostitution isn't just a female thing anymore. Mm. And just in the south of Johannesburg, there was an 11-year-old little boy. So it's getting, the level of depravity, as you were saying, it just shocks me. Hand in hand with all of this go a lot of other stuff, like the pornography stuff that we're starting to see the police working on and
cases. Is that being produced in South Africa?
Some of that is being produced in South Africa. Some of it's just being disseminated in South Africa. But a lot of it is being produced. And the money involved in some of these things, it's just unbelievable. But I'm very happy to say that we're seeing some good prosecutions on that level. But it's that kind of thing that we're allowing, for some reason, they're telling me that even Neisner could be like a pedophile haven, Come and there's sex tourism as well, that you can come and have sex with whoever you want. Just tell us your order.
In the past, that's only been in Thailand and in other parts of the world that have nothing to do with South Africa.
But it's coming, and it's here. It's here in all its forms. And the level of violence even that prostituted women are facing and men are facing, it's quite horrific.
So, incredible fear in that as well.
Yes.
And I'm sure that this is very linked to drugs, to the drug trade.
It's linked to everything, even the rhino trade. Mm. Mm. One of the common denominators is this organized crime idea. Mm. And when we think about that, we think about this huge, big, like mafia type thing. And just before the 2010, we were told there's over 500 known syndicates working in South Africa, and that was 2010. So we can probably double that number now. So instead of having a huge organized crime dealing with all of these cases, you've got old Piet Ferreira is going to start his little thing there, and he's going to control 15 over here, but he'll get protection from this guy. So it's like you've got all of these tiny little stuff happening, all the Parliament smuggling and all of that happening all over. A country will come in and build roads, bring its workers, but it'll also bring its girls for the workers. Then when the road's built, they don't go home. So everything, we really are. And what's happening also is that we've got cheaper. So in the transatlantic slave debacle, you could buy somebody for, like, let's say $10,000. Now you can buy somebody for 500 rand. So humankind has decided that we're actually worth less.
Because we're expendable.
How is it possible to sell a person for 500 rand?
They're expendable. And exactly.
You need to get rid of them.
And as soon as they're done, you'll find another one or get another one.
Exactly. You can take them for nothing. I mean, you can just, what's happening, we've got an idea of recruitment for human trafficking. So a guy will work with a girl for up to 6 months, befriend her, buy her stuff, and make sure that she's comfortable with him, start alienating her from her family so that she's angry with her mother and father all the time, start saying to her, well, let's go away together. Eventually, this whole thing is he's just a pimp. And he's going to sell her off. The minute he gets emotionally involved, he sells her so that he doesn't have that emotional attachment. And we know those things are happening. We've had girls that have been phoned by their best friends from school. Come to Pretoria. We've got a job here. They're stuck in Bloemfontein. They don't know what to do. They haven't got a job. Come up here. And what happens? They end up being prostituted. So it's there is no limit as to how – you don't even have to buy a girl, in other words. You can get her for nothing.
Wow.
This is horrific because when you see girls on the street, you sometimes think, okay, they've – okay. As we discussed before the show, they might have very bad or not supportive backgrounds and mother, daughter, a lot of deep issues and alcohol, whatever, self-esteem low. But actually what you're saying, we're seeing those girls on the streets and they're very high chances. They're not even working for themselves. They're not even making money. So they're exactly. not, so it's not even like, you know, they can say, okay, this is my choice. And we've discussed it before the show. It was an interesting thing you said to me. You said, do you really believe prostitution is a choice?
Yeah, I don't. I personally don't.
Yeah.
And I hate to say it, but very few people has actually, that I've, we've met, said to us, yeah, I wouldn't take it back. Yeah. Remember like that amazing courtesan?
Yeah, we did an interview with an amazing woman who the first time she was involved in prostitution was not a choice and then realized what she could do with it and actually paid for a business, earned enough money to put herself through university and then got out.
Yeah.
And has a very successful business today and family.
I love that. I love the idea of an exit strategy.
Because it was a choice, but it was a very conscious and carefully thought out process
choice.
That this is how I can get where I want.
And you see, we consider them broken, if you understand.
Yeah.
So let's just say they get out and they want to start a normal life.
Mm.
We were at Sexpo last year.
And your campaigns, by the way, are really unbelievably. They
thank
make
you.
They make a, such a change in people's understanding.
Thank you.
It's still from 3 years ago. I still remember their what? Stand was the best.
We were sitting opposite another stand, and a young girl came, and she had nothing on except they put a mask on her face, and she was on a wheel, and they were spinning her around, and they were, you know, whipping her, and it was all love tapping and everything. And she had an orgasm while she was on this wheel. And there must have been about 120, 130 people taking a video of this whole thing happening. And I said, you know, even afterwards, if she decided, you know what, I'm not going to do this anymore.
Mm.
There's over 120 people that have put her video out there. And she's broken, you know. The guy that takes her up is going to be a very special man.
Yeah.
That'll take her with all her brokenness and put her together again. And we just... Those men are so few and far between that my heart broke for her.
You know, years ago I read a book that had in-depth interviews with a couple of female porn stars. And it was the history of their lives, their education, how they got into porn, what they did. And one of the questions was, what advice would you give to a young woman wanting to do this? And they'd all been very successful at it, and some of them had gone into education after this. And they said, the one thing you have to know is once you have filmed something, it is there forever.
That's right.
So that's the first thing you need to be aware of, that it is there forever. And in today's world, that is going to come out somewhere.
Exactly.
That's a given. And they said, regardless of anything else, know that that is the single most important thing that you need to know. Once you film one scene, it's there.
That's it.
And in the theater of the erotic that we run in Sexpo, we make it very clear there are no cameras, there are no films. People are there because of their personal sexual experience and expression. It's not for anybody else to impinge on that.
You've discussed and you've opened the idea of what can be done more. What do you need? What are the things that you are looking for? Legal advice you've mentioned.
Yeah, you know, I just find it even our legal system is a little bit unbalanced. Maybe a lot. Unbalanced when it comes to even women that have separated or divorced from their husbands.
Tell us the story you told us just now.
We had a young girl. She got a letter to go to high court. She went to high court. Her husband was there with all his lawyers. She was there alone. And they took her baby away from her, her little girl, a little, you know, she's 8 years old, but it's her baby, it's her little, and now she's fighting and appealing and everything, and we're trying to make sure that she's got a
good
lawyer. What's
the background to that?
Well, they divorced, and it's not an acrimonious divorce, and the husband's up here, and she's far away, and so he wanted the child. you know, both parents think that they're the better parent. Yeah. It doesn't matter what you do. But the whole thing is that very often the child becomes this pawn in this whole big thing. And yeah, I think we make some bad decisions and then we get into a lot of trouble and there's nobody helping. There's nobody standing next to her. She's just outside the threshold of the legal aid, so she can't go to legal aid. And she just simply hasn't got the money to go. She's a single mom trying to make sure that everything happens where she is.
Did you get help for her or not yet? You're looking.
There is somebody that's probably going to help her in Port Elizabeth, but there's more than one case of this happening.
Of course. So this is a shout out, basically.
Yeah, it is.
So what are the resources that you need? I'm presuming funding is number one.
You know what? Funding always, you never have enough funding.
Yeah.
But it's not our number one. Our number one is we want people to lobby government and say, let's look at if we don't want to have prostitution on our streets and everybody phones quick enough to complain, there's a woman standing outside my door, whatever. But we need to have some exit strategies that are good, that are funded, that these girls can go to education. A lot of them are scared they're going to end up as a domestic servant. Who wants to end up as a domestic servant? They want education. They want to be able to better their life. We really do need to use the asset forfeiture money a little bit better, I think.
What impact would legalizing prostitution have on the trafficking scenario?
There are three arguments in this field. One is decriminalization, which it means that there's still laws that attain to that.
Mm.
The other one is where we are now, which is criminalization. And the other one is the Stockholm thing, or the Scandinavian idea, where the selling of sex is legal, but the buying of sex is not.
Mm.
So you have the whole idea where the John now suddenly becomes the bad guy instead of the prostitute. So we've got all of those ideas set in. But if you look at what we're doing, how would legalization actually help? Who's going to be in charge of that?
Mm.
Are we going to see the same cases in Holland where organized crime runs it and rules it? Both models don't work for me. I just say, let's fix what's broken here.
Mm.
If we're saying that prostitution shouldn't be an option for girls, we need to replace it with something else. That's number one. And number two, we need to really start saying, is the buying and selling of sex actually criminalized in this country if we haven't ever prosecuted a single John?
Mm.
That means there shouldn't be any prostitution because it takes two to tango.
And if I can just also just add on, if we really want to be active in helping these girls, men and women, on the street, I remember when I was stationed in Krugersdorp, they would stand outside my house, and I would come home at night, and they would flash, thinking that I'm a customer stopping. And I would chat to them, and they would say, well, give me a job, and I will stop this. So I think we need to also become as a society proactive and saying, yes, if we want these girls and these men off the streets, we have to find something for them then to do that, because they need bread on the table at
with
the end of the
45% unemployment in South Africa. Yeah. That's a very, very high hope. Yeah.
And I would imagine a lot of people, when asked to employ somebody like that, would be incredibly hesitant.
Well, yeah, because of the
because
stigma.
Of that,
yeah.
But the same thing as employing somebody just come
people,
out of jail.
You know?
Exactly. For sure, they have streetwise.
They've got degrees.
Know.
I mean, Margie can tell you of stories that, they're very well educated. Mm. There's absolutely. Just to add on, also, Margie did say funding is not, but if there is listeners that would like to, in a small way, help us, then we've got an SMS number.
Yeah.
Cost 30 Rand, and I think it will be on the contacts, 42290. And you can SMS and just say trafficking is your word. And in a small way, you know.
30 Rand helps.
30 Rand. Every drop fills the bucket, I say.
Yeah.
And just become aware, you know. That's absolutely.
Push those SMSs. Just go.
Yeah.
You know, when we talked about the graduates as well, you know, some of the young girls actually started this prostitution business to actually get funding for university.
Mm.
So they do it, and they tell themselves, I'm going to finish this. Once I've got my degree, I'm not going back.
Yeah.
But, you know, once they've got their degree, they've already so entrenched in that life, they can't leave it.
And the money becomes easy money in a way. Or it's not easy money because I think it's at the price of your soul.
Yes, I agree.
But it's money.
It's money. And usually by that stage, by the time they have the degree, they have a child. Usually that's the case. And also you must remember they get picked up by the police and then this happens. And then the one girl says to me, but you know, my friend is just as bad as me. She's got a blesser. And I'm thinking,
a blesser?
Yeah, she's got a guy that looks after her.
Ah, a sugar daddy.
Yes.
Okay.
But in South Africa we call it a blesser and blessy. So, you know, what are we teaching our young people? I mean,
but that's exactly it, because if you look, there's a lot of women out there that just shows you the psychic of it, the psychology behind. So women that make it a career, not women from human that, you know, that were involved, as far as I know, in human trafficking or prostitution, but they actually raise themselves, or with their mothers that took them to beauty pageants or whatever, raise themselves to be somebody's wife.
That's right.
And then it actually means you're a prisoner. In some degree.
Oh, yeah.
Because you never can really have vulnerability, honesty, you know, trust, all those things we're discussing here every week. You're actually getting into the idea that somebody can control me, that's just fine. And that is the essence of everything rotten, because that's how you actually can draw people to do this.
You know, I had a chat with a young girl in Shoshanguve, matric class. I was just talking about human trafficking, and we were just dealing with some of these cases. And she was telling me she has a minister of finance, she has a minister of medicine, she has a minister of clothing. The guy, one guy pays her Edgar's account, one guy pays her KeyCare account. And, you know, so she had all of these people, and they were all different men. So we wonder, how is our HIV status going up and up and up and all the rest of it? These young girls are having 5 to 6 partners, sexual partners, for whatever reason.
We're going to do a little metaphoric break. Yeah, so the idea is that maybe it's a good time to just stop and say, where are you? You are a human.
That's right.
You are a human. Mm. You deserve to have an opinion, to live for yourself. And this is something that sometimes it kind of gets away, because there's no – it's hard to say it, but it comes from home.
Yeah.
When your parents don't tell you, you matter.
Yeah, but you got to think about so many of the homes, I would imagine, that these people and girls come from where they have nothing anyway.
Yes, exactly. They have nothing. And they can do nothing, and they get told that.
Yeah.
On a regular basis.
Yeah, so for a family with no birth control, you know, we hear stories from India so often of girls that are sold there because the family can't support them.
Mm-mm. And some of them are just a lower class. Mm. So you can't do this, you can't do that. Yeah, I think.
And it's been happening for so long. It's become such a part of culture.
Yes.
Rightly or wrongly, there's no judgment on it. That's what people do.
That's right. That's exactly what people do. And I think the secret behind this is, you know, there's an old saying there, but by the grace of God go I. I think we need to revisit that. We need to look at each other as if, you know what, you have the same worth that I have. Mm. When I chat to these prostituted women, I can't tell you how much respect I have for them and how much affection I have for them, because I think this is a mom just trying to do her best. She's only 18. She's got a child. She's making sure that child's going to get fed. And she doesn't. She has dreams, and she has. We picked up one young girl. She was 16. And I said to her, what do you want to be? She said, I want to be a pilot. Mm. And I thought, wow, you can be that. You know, nothing's going to stop you. But she was at that stage already with HIV. So it's so sad.
And so much of this then is also the education of men. You know, what are we 100%. Teaching men? What kind of men are we bringing up in our 100%. World? What are we breeding?
Yeah.
Because from the stories that you've heard, it's this whole supply and demand thing. If somebody has a need for something, they are going to find it somewhere.
That's right.
Somebody wants to abuse a person in that way, they are going to find the person to abuse.
Yeah.
So much of that is what we're breeding men, and it really, the idea of you know what conscious sexuality teaches and how to be, and we've done shows on rape, on domestic violence in areas like Diepsloot. And so much of this is, it's just about the expression of power of one human being over another. That's all that it is. It's not about sex. It's not about, it's just the power over a human being. So how powerless do we have to feel within ourselves to have to exercise that in that way?
Exactly.
It's fathers modeling the role to their sons.
Yeah, and we look at our men.
Start at home.
And there are weak leaders in our world, religiously, politically.
Yeah.
Look at what happened in America with this health bill that's been passed.
Yeah.
And all these men walk out and go and celebrate that 24 million people lose health care.
Crazy.
Yeah. And that's... there's no, sorry, it's not strength.
I think the saddest thing I once heard is, Margie, when we were in Cape Town and we spoke to Griselda, and she said, I can give you 10 members of parliament now, at least, who is my customers, or who were my customers.
Oh, for sure.
And that to me was just showed where we are, even as a country, and we wonder why things go wrong in the country, you know. But the it's role model
exactly
at home.
Yeah.
It is.
It starts at home.
How do you talk to your siblings? How do boys and girls talk to one another? There was a time, I know it's like a silly example, but there was a time when you'd walk into a room and men would stand and they would say, here's a seat. That doesn't happen anymore.
Mm-mm.
It was at the same time when you could shake somebody's hand and know that they're going to keep their word.
Mm.
It's just basic stuff. It's going back to what we were taught when we were tiny.
Mm.
And we're coming up to Mother's Day and then Father's Day the following month. And I just think one of the saddest things for me about South Africa is that we have a lot of absentee fathers.
Yeah.
Whether it's for going away for work or whatever – even parents, we have absentee mothers, children being brought up by their grandparents, and angry because their mothers and fathers are not around to protect them or to be with them or to whatever.
I talk about that a lot, that we have this entire generations of angry men.
Yes.
And the only way they can get that out often is taking it out on somebody else because they are so unfulfilled within themselves.
Right.
And more I come to see that we don't change by what we do. We don't change our world by what we do. We change it by who we are.
I agree.
Exactly.
We change it by what's in our heart, what's in our spirit.
That's right.
Not what we do, because what we do becomes an extension of that.
That's right. That's right.
And that's where change happens.
That's very true.
That's very, very true. We know we rescued a whole group of fishermen in Cape Town. And they were telling us the most horrific stories. They hadn't been paid for the whole time that they had been out at sea. And if somebody got sick, they were just thrown overboard. You know, so they get into Cape Town Harbor. Now the ship is impounded because there's money missing or whatever. And those guys came out. We have a shelter in
Victoria.
In Cape Town for men. And so the men went into their shelter. But just imagine, here's the breadwinner. He's got to go home. We eventually, IOM and all sorts of organizations helped him get home. But he's going to go home without money, even though he's been away for this long time.
Mm.
So he gets home, and I'm not saying that this happens, but what could easily have happened. He gets home, he's angry. He's disappointed in himself. His wife says to him, where's the money? And abuse happens. It's, you know, we're looking back and we're thinking, where did this all go wrong?
Mm.
And it went wrong inside a heart that was so broken already. Yeah. So I think we're a broken world.
We are.
And I, you know, every little person that's whole helps it heal.
Yeah. And we do that by being.
Hmm.
And it's, my model of the world is that it's everything is an energy and we're all connected on that level. The more we are in our own hearts with love, with openness, the more that goes out and allows for more of that in the world.
Look, you know, we're faith-based, so we have a very strong religious hold in our lives. Mm. And we just feel that if God created all of us in his likeness – and we're all perfect. Who am I to say that you shouldn't look the way you look, or you shouldn't dress the way you dress, or you shouldn't be the way you've been? because I don't believe that God's just like me. Mm. You know, I believe that God and the expression of people is the expression of God and who he is.
Yep.
So when we go out onto the street, we don't talk about rescuing. Our ladies are so sick and tired of hearing the word rescue because they say nobody really rescues them.
Mm.
So we talk about the fact that you need a return. We've got an R with a root. And you need a return to who you are, who God intended you to be, and what God intended you to be. And if he created you in his likeness, it means he wants you to be like him. And that's whole and that's beautiful. And then we talk about the whole idea of reintegration into society. And that's not easy. It's not easy even if you have been a prostitute for a very short time. You know, we rescued some Thai girls. They were only in prostitution for 3 months. But those 3 months broke them, destroyed them. Some of them were gang raped. You know, I've chatted to girls who don't know who their father of their children are. So when that child grows up and says, I want to meet my dad, I don't know who he is.
Margie and Karen, thank you.
Sorry, we kept you a little bit longer. You need to go. But but this is important.
Thank you. Yeah. And I'd like to offer this platform in any way we can.
Thank you.
Thanks.
To help you. That. And if there is a way that in the future we can.
Come to the streets, talk to people. Let's do it properly. Yeah.
Thank you.
It'll be great. Thank you very much.
Well, pleasure. We'll check
you. And all your contact details will go out on our social media. Yeah,
everything is on you.
So thank you.
Thank you.
So let's go somewhere just a little different for a moment.
In a way, you know, Jonty, when you talk to those folks, to those parents, you know, people come to you to workshops, to retreats, to lessons, to free talks, they want to change their perspective. In a way, it's the other side of the circle maybe, but it's
part of human. It's all the spectrum of being human. And the more that we can be in our own hearts, the more we will change things simply by the way that we be. And that, for me, just affirms the work and the journey. So we have a whole lot of workshops coming up that are on Facebook. A beautiful event for couples, a tantric heart-centered massage weekend at Zebra's Crossing. And for the first time in a couple of years, I will be teaching in Cape Town in June. That's also up on Facebook, and I'm really looking forward to sharing with you there. May is Masturbation Month. We're all wankers. So next Friday, we are going to be wankers. And anybody wants to come in the studio?
No bodily fluids. Sorry.
No bodily fluids. Yeah. So bring your own towels.
Just be in like a huge condom, maybe a big bubble. So we have to balance a little bit.
Yes.
Yeah.
So next
week. We'll find interesting ways to look into masturbation.
So next week is how you can really elevate your self-pleasuring to making love with yourself. Take it beyond that little kind of...
If men knew that...
10-second orgasm.
Seriously, there will be much less problems.
100%. We can do so much more. So that's what we are talking about next week.
True.
So share your stories with us. What's the weirdest place you have masturbated in?
I'm still going to share with us how you can help us with the Salvation Army fight. But okay, we can do both.
We
can do both.
And I just wish you all so much pleasure. CliffCentral.com